This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a spectacular Tuesday as we cruise through this week. And I'm going to level with you here. I still have to, on this show, I'm going to address, finally, the Marjorie Taylor Greene thing. I have to talk about the administrative state and what that idiot KBJ said in the Supreme Court about the administrative state and what they're working on there. I have so much stuff I still want to get to, but I don't know if I'm going to get there for a while. In fact, let me go ahead and spoil it. I know I'm not going to get there for the next hour. Maybe you are new to the Jesse Kelly Show. Let me go ahead and give it to you. I'm a history freak. I am not a historian. I'm a stupid, uneducated barbarian. I was a Marine and a construction worker. I went to community college. I just love history. I have since I was a child. I love history. I can't get enough of it. And from time to time on this show, I will basically stop all commentary, food, politics, life, and I will just tell a history story of some kind. I would say every month, every 2 months, I do this. Sometimes it's an hour. Sometimes it's 3 hours. I try to not take up the whole show with that for people who hate it. What we've kind of fallen into, me, Chris, Corey, we've kind of fallen into this hour two. We will do an hour, and then we'll go back to it. So here's the spoiler alert. The next hour is going to be history. It is going to be very applicable to America today, to communist insurgencies, world affairs, military affairs. There's a lot we can apply. I'm going to stop after an hour. We'll go back to the news. Tomorrow, hour two, we're picking it up again. And we'll keep doing it every day until I'm done with it, okay? But there is a conflict that is relatively recent, I guess, called the Rhodesian-Bush War. But it is a conflict, as I talk to people, some know a lot about. There seems to be no in-between. There are people who know a lot about it, and there are people who know nothing about it. Almost nobody seems to know a little bit about it. Let me give you the reason why. In my opinion, having spent quite a while reading, looking this up, it's been weeks I've been digging into this. It takes place in Africa, so it's clear across the globe. It wasn't, now America was involved, and we'll get to that, but it wasn't really an American thing, so Americans are not going to pay as much attention. African wars in general, wars and famines and things like that, are so common to us as we look at the news that one doesn't necessarily stand out over the others, so we don't look into that. It's just kind of one of those things that's gone by most people. Another reason it goes by most Americans is your teachers in your government schools, if that's what you went to, and in your universities, if that's what you went to, most likely were communists or communist adjacent. And don't get me wrong, everybody at some point in time in this story doesn't necessarily look great, but there was a lot of communist involvement here. In fact, it was the communists who destroyed Rhodesia. And therefore, your fifth grade social studies teacher probably doesn't want to bring it up for the same reason they'll tell you till they're blue in the face about Hitler, but they don't want to really tell you about Mao and Stalin and all those things because it makes communism look bad, all right? So the people who don't know about it, those are kind of the reasons people don't know about it. Now, why the other extreme? And we got a bunch of emails from people who are clearly Rhodesian Bush war freaks. Why the other extreme?
It is so fascinating. It's so fascinating. And because it's so fascinating in so many different ways, you can be obsessed with it. What kind of ways? Maybe you're a dude or even a chick who's into military stuff. We're going to be talking about one of the finest militaries, in my opinion, that has ever walked the planet. Almost a Spartan-like society for reasons I'll explain. Also, maybe you're into tribal warfare, that kind of stuff. I love that stuff too, as you know. American Indians, things like that. It's got all kinds of that. So maybe military stuff is yours. Maybe political drama is your thing. Maybe different forms of government are your thing. Maybe diplomacy itself, this nation leaning on that nation, but they lean on that nation. But whatever you happen to be into, it's in this, and you can just wade into this story and not get near enough. I'm going to break this down, and it's going to take me a while, and I promise you, if you are interested in what I'm talking about now, if you go start picking up books, you will learn so much more than I'm about to tell you. You'll learn new stuff. It's amazing, all right? Now, remember when we did the crappiest country in the world? Crappiest country in the world tournament. How many do we have, Chris? 16 countries? 16 countries in the crappiest country in the world tournament. One of those countries, maybe you remember, was a country named Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, huh? Sounds pretty rough. What was wrong with Zimbabwe? Well, there's the whole 50% unemployment thing. There's the whole, you broke your arm, you show up at the hospital, and they don't have any doctors thing. There's the no medicine, cabinets are empty, no water in some places. It's so bad in Zimbabwe that people, when they have the means to do so, regularly flee now. A truly, truly terrible place. But that is interesting, you see, because if you were to rewind to, again, not ancient history, we'll call it 1960, Zimbabwe is the wealthiest country in all of Africa. You know how big Africa is? How many countries there are? It is not just wealthy, as in there's a couple rich guys. Families are on paved roads, air conditioning. People drive Jaguars up the road. Wonderful modern schools, hospitals, universities. If I were to put a blindfold on you right now and rewind to the year 1960 and put you in any American city, you could look around and see what life is like in a modern country. And then I would have blindfold you again and teleport you over to, it wasn't Zimbabwe then, but to Zimbabwe of 1960, you would not be able to tell the difference until the people started to speak and you heard the accent. So, it was so wonderful in 1960. Why do people flee now? Starve to death now? Why aren't there doctors? Why isn't there medicine? We're about to tell that story. Let us rewind. We're going to go back into, this is early. We're talking about the age of sailing ships. I'm going to have to give you details that I normally don't give as I lay this out because the base of knowledge so many people have is lacking here. Don't feel bad about that. Most people don't have it, right? So when I'm vague, it's because I've got too many details coming for you later. Rewind all the way back to the sailing ship age, the age of Christopher Columbus. The European powers are starting to take these wonderful sailing ships and they're starting to cross the globe. They're looking for things. They're looking to claim new lands. They're looking to claim new resources. One of those super powerful countries back then, which it's funny to think about this now because they're not very powerful, was Portugal. Portugal was big. Portugal starts bouncing around Africa. They're around the southern tip of Africa. And they start to move inland a little bit. And they find this climate that is kind of wonderful. When you think of Africa, you don't think about it that way, right? You probably think about thick jungle. Maybe you're thinking about the Sahara, these vast sands and things like that. Of course, those things exist. But remember, Africa is huge. It stands to reason there would be parts of it where the climate is flat out pretty friggin' nice. Portugal finds this climate, try to take this climate, and an African tribe, we won't go into the details of that, fights a valiant war and bounces the Portuguese. Portugal says, hey man, we're out. Portugal leaves, but the knowledge is there that there is kind of this little honey hole towards southern Africa. Not too shabby. From there, we will fast forward to the late 1800s. Before we get to that, let's talk about your identity. No, not your eyes and ears and your name. I'm talking about the identity that has a monetary value to thieves. Your phone number, your address, your social security number. These things are out there online. And if thieves are able to get a hold of them, they will steal your identity and wipe you out. They'll empty your bank account, destroy your credit, take loans out in your name. Your life can become a nightmare like that. Now, I know you already know about identity theft, but what's the company you can trust? Who's been doing it forever? Who has all these wonderful reviews? What's the company that's not a big scam artist? Meaning, if you do get taken to the cleaners, they'll actually make you whole again. That would be LifeLock. You've heard me talk to you about LifeLock for a long time. They have their reputation for a reason. They're not there to rip you off. They're there to protect you. They'll let you know if something bad happens. If they do get you in the end, LifeLock's restoration specialists will make you whole. If you join now, you save up to 40% off your first year with the promo code Jesse. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK, promo code Jesse, or go to lifelock.com, promo code Jesse. Don't wait until something bad happens and then call. Then they can't help you. LifeLock.com, promo code Jesse. Terms apply. More history next.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. You can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com, and I'm going to get to some of those next hour and stuff like that. But if you're just joining us, we're talking history, the Rhodesian Bush War. Don't worry, you only missed 10 minutes. This could be 10 hours. I'm only going to do hour two tonight. Don't worry, we'll be back to politics in 45 minutes or so. So, Africa. Let's go to the late 1800s. Now, pause. Before we get to the late 1800s, there were a warlike people who started stomping the other African tribes in southern Africa back in the day. If I were to ask you to name one African tribal warlord, you would probably be able to name zero or one. And the one you would probably name would be who? Do you know, Chris? Do you know? Shaka Zulu. Shaka Zulu. Yeah, I knew you knew it. Most people know the name when you say it. So what was Shaka Zulu's deal? Shaka Zulu was this incredible warlike leader. He led the Zulus in Africa. He revolutionized some things about combat back then. We won't go into the details. It was their spears, and the Africans were used to throwing their spears. Whatever. Shaka Zulu revolutionized some warlike things. And as happens throughout history, including today, the more powerful people will eventually begin conquering the less powerful people around them. He starts beating up on everyone. All right. Eventually, he has somebody who breaks off from him. He essentially has one of his generals rebel. The general rebels and heads north. All right. Now, this is the first one of the details I'm going to have to give you. And the only reason I'm giving you this detail is it's going to come up later. In fact, it's probably going to come up multiple times. We're in the era of Shaka Zulu, and this is actually going to be a thread that goes throughout the Rhodesian Bush War. The people who break off are called the Indibele. The Indibele. Don't worry if you don't remember the name, but that is the warlike tribe that broke off from Shaka Zulu. They broke off. They went north. In case you're wondering, Shaka Zulu pursued them, kind of broke off the chase, whatever. They went north. Well, remember, I already told you these people were incredibly warlike, military advancements, and they started slaughtering and subjugating all the other tribes they came into contact with. I'm not dogging on them. That's how life was then, and frankly now. We live in a world of conquest. And it was ugly, and they ran across peaceful tribes and slaughtered them or made them slaves. They come across the area that is now known as Zimbabwe, and they discover exactly what I just talked to you about earlier. Wow, it's kind of nice here. I think I'll stay. And because they were more powerful than the other tribes, they moved in and set up shop. Now for the only other tribe, I swear on my life, I'm only going to give you two tribes because they're the two main ones. I could bring other ones to you, but it would only bore you and you would hate your life. The Shona. The Shona. Two tribes. Indibele and Shona. Indibele and Shona. With me? This is really going to matter for later on. The Indibele move in and they subjugate the Shona. The Shona become the Indibele slaves. And it can be okay slavery. Remember, slavery can run the gamut throughout history. Sometimes slavery means, hey, you don't get paid, but you're the math tutor for my son. Here's a nice warm bed. Go feed the horses and teach my son algebra. And sometimes slavery can be, we'll work you to death in the salt mines. You'll probably die 6 months from now, right? It can run the gamut. This also could run the gamut. Believe me when I tell you the Shona people had no rights whatsoever. You didn't have a say in your government. They were slaves in every way. And in a lot of ways, they were pillaged. But they did come to some sort of an existence where the Shona understood they were slaves. The Indibele were ruling Zimbabwe. I'm going to continue to refer to this area as Zimbabwe until it turns to Rhodesia. So just hang with me. Remember this as a disclaimer. It was not Zimbabwe at the time. There was nothing at this time. Nothing. There was no nation of any kind. These were just tribes. Let's fast forward now to the 1800s, the late 1800s. The Indibele are still ruling this area. Some guys want to go hunt some game in this area controlled by the Indibele. Everyone in Africa knew by now the Indibele were calling the shots there. These hunters didn't want to be disrespectful, and they didn't want to end up on the business end of a spear, so they stopped by the headquarters of the Indibele king, and they said, hey, you've got a lot of animals we want to shoot here. Can you mind if we give you a little this, little that? You know, they exchanged some goods. If it's okay with you, we're going to go hunt. The king of the Indibele said, hey, thanks for the gifts. I appreciate it. Yeah, go shoot some game. The guys take off. They go have a good time hunting in Africa, but they find something. And it's so funny how life works sometimes. One little discovery can lead to so many other things. The hunters keep running into tribal peoples, and they're wearing gold. Not just one little gold thing. They're wearing a lot of gold. The hunters go back. Actually, they go to South Africa. South Africa's south of this. And they start talking to people about what they discovered and what their plan was. Continue in a moment. Before we continue that, would you like to have the heart of an adventurer who wants to go hunt wild game in Africa while conversing with an African king who may burn you alive? That's going to require testosterone. All right. You can't just do that out of nowhere. And because our testosterone todays are in free fall, you're probably going to be too afraid of that African spear, but you don't have to be afraid because Chalk is here. A male vitality stack from Chalk, clinically tested. 20% increase in your testosterone in just 90 days. When I tell you about Chalk, I'm not asking for you to, hey, just trust me, 5 years from now, you'll be better. 90 days? How much different would your 2026 be if you were full of pep? If you were full of energy? If you were full of focus? If your mind worked better? You'll be better at work. You'll be better at home. You can have the best year of your life. Go get a subscription. Give it to someone for Christmas. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk. They have female vitality stacks too. Highly recommend it. CHOQ.com. Promo code Jesse. Get a subscription. Save some money. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You gotta make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. If you miss any part of the show, you can download it on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. And I was just talking to Jewish producer Chris about this during the break. Obviously, Christmas is coming up, and you know how it works in radio. The reason your favorite radio host is gone for a couple weeks at Christmas, your favorite TV host is gone, podcaster, whoever, is because this is the time of year where they essentially force you to leave. All the advertisers leave, people are off work, nobody listens, so they say, don't come in, don't come in. Obviously, around Christmas, I have to take time too. This is going to be something you could go back and listen to a couple times. Listen to with the kids when you miss me. I will be back. I'm going to miss you too, trust me. I'm going to miss you too. Back to our story. It's the late 1800s. Some hunters just got back from Zimbabwe, and they found gold. And as the saying goes, loose lips sink ships. Because the hunters got back from Zimbabwe, and they had done something very smart before they left. They went to the king and they said, hey, we kind of like this gold stuff you have going. Would you mind if we come back and take some of that? We're going to give you a cut. We're not trying to do you wrong. We're going to give you a cut. We'll bring you this. We'll bring you that. But is it okay? It'll be really small if we come back and get some of that gold. The king of the Indibeli, the ruling tribe at the time, said, yeah, sure. Knock yourself out. Go ahead. Okay. The hunters get back to South Africa. Now, I need to pause for a moment, and I'm probably going to end up doing this a couple times, but I need to explain the geography of what we're talking about because it's going to matter a lot. So what I want you to do is I want you to make a circle in your mind. Don't worry. You don't have to write it down. You can if you want. A circle. This circle you just made is a clock. All right? A clock. Now, from about 6 o'clock to about 8 o'clock, that border is South Africa. To the south, kind of the southwest. From 6 o'clock all the way to about 12 o'clock, that is Mozambique. That is going to be huge for the purposes of our story, but I'll come back to it. Don't worry about memorizing that now. The other two countries are not as important. Just know that north, because it will come up, is Zambia. All right? Zambia, Mozambique, South Africa. The hunters go back to South Africa. 6 and 8 o'clock, okay? Instead of shutting their mouths about the gold and the agreement they got, they start to talk. And that was a really bad idea because there was a man in South Africa who had an unbelievable amount of money and power, and he wanted more of it, and his name was Cecil Rhodes, or Cecil Rhodes. All these names are pronounced differently depending on what you're listening to or reading. I'm going to call him Cecil Rhodes because that was the most common. Who was Cecil Rhodes? First, he was a Brit. The Brits are going to play a huge part. This is a British story, really. A British story. He was a major, major power player in Britain. super wealthy guy. Now, what's he doing over there? Well, this is the late 1800s. Britain is aware that most of their colonial age has probably passed it by, but they haven't given up the game yet. They still want to find other lands, far off lands, to take over, to mine, to find a place for their people, to, you know, they're an empire that likes to expand. Britain also had something else they did, and they did it very, very well, very successfully multiple times throughout their history. They would almost allow their conquests to be privatized in a way where you can go conquer this land. No, no, take some British people. Raise an army if you like. In fact, we want you to. And you have our permission. But we're not really officially doing it. You see, we're washing our hands of it. If you would like to go do something and it works out, we'll be there to help out and, of course, take over in the end. Cecil Rhodes, he essentially steals this agreement from these hunters. And Cecil Rhodes decides he likes the idea of this Zimbabwe place. He likes the climate. He thinks agriculture could get big there. Mining is very clearly going to get big there. And by the way, Zimbabwe ended up being really big on things like chrome and stuff like that. But Cecil Rhodes is one of these, you'd call him a billionaire type conquistador, is essentially what he was. So Cecil Rhodes does something. He goes to the king of Zimbabwe, the exact same king the miners had dealt with. And he, in a way, I guess, rips him off. Maybe, maybe not. Here's how the deal went. Hey, you know how these hunters were going to mine a little bit here? We're not. We'd like to mine a lot here. And I understand your concerns about this, king. I totally get that. It's your land. Want to be clear? It's your land. Just to prove to you that it's your land, because we're going to be bringing all these people through here, we'll build you some roads. We're going to have roads and stuff like that. We're going to give you some guns as well. They didn't necessarily specify the age of the guns, but these are people with shields and spears. Hey, king, I know you like to rule over the people around you. How about some superior weaponry? They even promised him they would bring him a gunboat that went up the river. They didn't end up ever delivering on the gunboat, but they did bring some guns. The king, call him naive, but hindsight's 20/20, says, you know what? I like the sounds of that. I want some roads. I want some guns. Come on in. Cecil Rhodes raises what essentially amounts to an entire civil society for this invasion. When I say civil society, I mean there are troops, but there are more than troops. There are doctors. There are lawyers. There are miners. There's really every major aspect of the society you can think of any society you can think of, certainly a modern society. Cecil Rhodes raises these people from South Africa, from Britain. They come from all other places. But this is actually going to be an important part of the story as well. I find it fascinating. It's almost like a weird society that was grown in a lab. He wasn't grabbing the dregs of every society. He wasn't emptying the prisons or grabbing this guy who was down on his luck. He actually went to the high-class society people, established families, wealthy families, educated people. And he said, hey, your son's a doctor. Come on down. Hey, do you want a lot of farmland? Your daughter. He took what essentially amounted to the cream of the crop and invaded Zimbabwe with the permission of the king with all of these people. And he starts carving roads into Zimbabwe. He starts building armies. This is all done with the permission of the British crown. And again, it's just cheaper and easier for the British crown to say, hey, Cecil, have at it. You have our permission. We're not going to bother. We're not sending our people. You just go. And they, this society, we'll call it 500 people, because that's roughly how many he came in with originally, walk into this country, totally foreign country. You have a king in this tribe, and the king has a slave tribe that's under him, and you have all this other stuff, and they start hacking out a living in the middle of this wild African land. It wasn't, again, known as Zimbabwe at this time, but that would one day be known as Zimbabwe. Now, there eventually began to be some chafing with the relationships. We'll talk about some chafing next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic, fantastic Tuesday. We are almost to the end of our first hour on the Rhodesian Bush War. I know it's the second hour of the show. I'm just going to do 10 more minutes on this, and then we'll return to the story tomorrow. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. All right, next hour, we have all kinds of stuff to get to, the administrative state and layoffs and Marjorie Taylor Greene and emails and other things. But back to our story here. All right, so this society of miners and troops and things like that under Cecil Rhodes, they go into Zimbabwe. They strike an agreement with the king. This is the late 1800s, remember, 1890s. I already told you there are two different African tribes here. There's more than two, but we're just for the sake of simplicity, there's two major ones. The Indibele, the ruling tribe, and the Shona, the less powerful tribe. In 1893, a tribal war breaks out. Now, I need to set something up before the tribal war breaks out. I need to explain that in these early years for the settlers or colonizers or whatever you want to call them, for Cecil Rhodes and the crew, this is not at all a pleasant time of plenty, not at all. This is a completely uncivilized place as far as civilization goes for them. It's hard to get supplies in. They are having to essentially carve out civilization from nothing. And it's tough sledding. Very, very, very tough. So these are people, believe me, they're not sitting around being fanned by African slaves. They are working their fingers to the bone. There is disease. There is deprivation. It's very, very hard. Now, 1893, these two tribes break out in a war. I say a war, but as per usual, the Indibele were more powerful at the time. And the Indibele start to slaughter the Shona who had been their slaves. And a different kind of a slaughter than the Europeans were used to. I'm going to refer to them as Europeans a lot because that's mainly the background of these people. They watched children being burned alive by the Indibele. The Indibele were given orders by their king, hey, don't lay a finger on the Europeans. Go ahead, slaughter the Shona, kill them all. I don't care. But whatever you do, do not touch the Europeans. He was very aware that he was in a dangerous situation and should not offend the Europeans. But remember that talk we had after Hamas invaded Israel on October 7th in what was a raid? Remember that talk we had about how there's a way of doing things? About how you're going to have a hard time finding a sympathetic ear if you can't stop yourself from burning babies in an oven? When people come across that, you're going to ruin your reputation. Let's just say the Indibele ruined their reputation. They were essentially spearing pregnant women 5 feet away from Europeans. The Europeans are looking at this and they cannot believe what they're seeing. Now, in defense, I can't believe I'm about to say this, in defense of the Indibele, who were doing the spearing and burning, that's how it had
always been in Africa with these tribal wars. That's how tribal wars had always looked. That's how they'd always sounded. It was always slaughter. It was always horrible. They were doing what they had always done, but the Europeans certainly were not used to that way of living, and they certainly had not been introduced to it right in front of them. They are freaking mortified. The Europeans are mortified, and they decide, okay, I can see we're going to have to square things away here. The Europeans have had enough of this, and they arm the army. I know the Indibeli have some guns already, but they didn't have something called the Maxim gun. The Maxim gun is one of the first known machine guns that was ever employed, and that war went about like you would expect. The Europeans step in and say, you guys are freaking savages, and this is no longer your area. We are not going to handle that. We are not going to allow this. You're going to die. The Indibeli fight a war against the Europeans, and it went about like you would expect. Yes, the Europeans lost a patrol. They got too cocky. This 20-man patrol went out and got surrounded by 1,000 Indibeli and got slaughtered, and it was an ugly thing. But for the most part, the Europeans just absolutely mopped the floor with the Indibeli, wiped them out, gone. And in their minds, because of the slaughter they had witnessed before, they felt like they had every justification now to do what they'd always wanted. And let's be honest, it's what they always wanted. Create a new colony, a new country. They were already colonizing it, but that gave them everything they needed to say, we are in charge now. King, you're no longer the king. You don't rule anything here. We Europeans, we now own this country. But this is a very, very big country. A very, very big country. At one point in our story, when this uncharted land becomes Rhodesia, and it's about to become Rhodesia tomorrow, they're going to have a 2,000-mile border. 2,000 miles. Don't think of this place as some tiny little place. It is a place that is gigantic with mountains and rivers and thick woods. And it's a huge, huge place. There aren't that many of them. How do you start a country from what amounts to essentially nothing? You've got teachers, you've got doctors, you've got miners, you've got things like that, but you have to start the process of a whole new country. And that process begins tomorrow, and it'll be bloody too. Before we get to that, life would have been so much easier. What, Chris, if they'd had some cozy earth sheets? I realize the disease and the deprivation was bad, but at the end of the day, if you can crawl into your bed and have these wonderful bamboo sheets from Cozy Earth all over you, it just makes everything better, even the tribal slaughter. I bet they would like robes as well, Cozy Earth robes. Probably everywhere pants, whether you are in church on Sunday, working in the mines, or committing genocide, Cozy Earth's everywhere pants are there for every occasion. They look good and they're as comfortable as sweatpants. And right now, up to 40% off at CozyEarth.com with the promo code Jesse. Do not miss out on your one-stop shop for Christmas shopping. CozyEarth.com, promo code Jesse. Robes and sheets and everywhere pants. And yes, ladies, fancy face creams. They would have loved those in Zimbabwe too. CozyEarth.com, promo code Jesse. Let's talk about the administrative state next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.